be no shear the next 2 weeks. I'm sorry for the starting and stopping, but the alternative was to wait 3 weeks to start the shear. But Yirsa Hashem, next Tuesday, we'll be going away for a week. Let's just say it's a much needed getaway, but it so happens that two Wednesdays will be while we're flying. So we're not going to have shear the next 2 weeks, but then we will pick up the week after that. So I apologize. However, the good news is that I think that for the most part, the stuff we're going to do this evening is self-contained, and that way it won't be something that's necessarily lingering. Furthermore, I want to thank Mrs. Bar-Am for bringing a cake for a belated siyum for our conclusion of Parshas Bereishis. She learned the lessons of elementary school. If you're going to bring food for yourself, you have to bring for everybody. So she's cutting, and I don't mind if you eat during class, because while she learned the lessons of elementary school, this is in fact not elementary school. And therefore, it's perfectly all right to eat while we're learning. Okay. Okay, that's true. Please try not to eat over the chumash. That's right. Okay. Susan is very machmir on the shilas of Bedikas Chometz. Finally, as well, I just want to mention, I hope everyone has a sheet. If not, if I didn't make enough, I apologize. I can always try to make more, but certainly please try to look on. Everyone should have a chumash and a source sheet, or at least be next to someone who has a chumash and a source sheet. Okay. Eating is allowed. Kibbutzing is not. Okay. We're ready to begin Parshas Noach with great excitement, anticipation. This really very much is, on every level, as I entitled this evening's shiur, a new chapter in a certain sense for us, but more importantly in the history of humanity, in the world. The first chapter of the Torah, really dominated, of course, by Adam and Chava, although we saw at the end of Perek Hey and Vav, the last few weeks we were learning the whole lineage of the 10 generations that span from Adam to Chava, but they are, in essence, given passing reference. Please. They're giving passing reference. The focus, of course, of the first Parsha Bereishis in terms of a narrative of people after the creation story is the story of Adam and Chava. And we then gloss over 10 generations until we get to the generation of Noah. And that is really the second great chapter, although it will be a tragic chapter, as we all know, but the second great chapter in the unfolding story of the world and of the human race. The beginning of Parshas Noach in this chapter, which is really we pick up in the beginning of Perek Vav, is like every Parsha, subdivided. There's different themes in different parts of the Perek. And really the first few psukim, I would say the first four psukim are one unit. So what I'd like to do, as our custom, is to read all of those psukim this evening, just so we get a sense of the flow of the first four psukim, but then to take a step back and really focus the rest of the shiur on an intensive collection of sources, both from Chazal and from the Mefarshim, the commentaries, really all on the first pasuk. And we will not even exhaust with all of that this evening, we will not exhaust the discussion of the first parak, because what I would like to do is to do everything but have the great debate. The great debate, of course, being how good a guy was Noah, which is from the opening Rashi in our Parsha. And needless to say, that's a Rashi, but there's a huge literature that surrounds that Rashi, which picks up with different parts of this pasuk, other psukim, and that is something which I didn't want to start and stop with a break, so we'll pick up with that great debate next week. But there's still a lot to say about the first pasuk, even before we get to the most famous part of the first parents, pasuk. But let's first begin by just reading, and again, let's do so with a inquisitive and a critical eye. Think of the psukim as they're flowing, whether it's for language or for narrative or theme. What makes sense to you? What doesn't make sense to you? What jumps off the page? What do we need to understand more? Parsha begins, Eile toldos Noach. Well, I'll ask the first question, because it's an unavoidable one. How do you translate the word toldos? What does generations mean? Children. Okay, that's a very, very good suggestion. For now, let's assume that's the case. These are the generations, these are the children, the progeny of Noach. Noach ish tzaddik, Noach was righteous. Tamim haya bedarosa, if he was pure or completely righteous, we'll have to see how to translate that more next time, in his generation. Esa Elohim hisaleich Noach, Noach walked with the Lord, as we would say. Noach walked with Hashem. Pasuk Yud. Vayoled Noach shlosha banim, Noach had three sons, Shem, Cham, Ves, Yafes. Three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. Vatisha Ches Haaretz, and the world was corrupt or disgusting, Lifnei Elohim, before in the eyes of God. Vatimalei Haaretz Chamas, and the earth was filled with Chamas, which is either generally destructiveness or specifically thievery or robbery. Vayar Elohim es haaretz, and therefore God, looking at this world that's now been described as v'tishaches and filled with chamas, so God looks at this world es haaretz v'hinei nishchasa, and He sees how it is become corrupt. Ki hishchis kol basar es darko, because every living thing, all flesh, have corrupted their way, its way respectively, al haaretz, on the face of the earth. Now the reason I stop here, not just because there's a pause in the text, but Hagufa, the reason there's a pause in the text, is because the next pasuk is not just the observation, both objectively or even subjectively, from God's perspective about what was going on in the world, but you then have the transition in the next pasuk, Vayomer Elohim Lanoach. Then you have the communication of God's opinion about what He has witnessed and His judgment and determination and decision to destroy the world, which is a whole separate discussion, how He communicates it to Noah, Noah's reaction, what He wants Noah to do, etc. It's not, apples and oranges, it's not completely different stories. Of course, it's the same story, but it's the next chapter, it's the next phase of the story. Here we have, before any communication between Hashem and Noah, we just have, so to speak, if you will, from a narrative perspective, and from Hashem's perspective, what's going on? What's going on? What are we witnessing? What has the world come to in this culmination of the 10 generations starting from Adam? And we have this description, this is like, if you will, this is like the reporter, filing, this report. This is like the four line, the AP, the wire report. These are the four lines. This is the basic four psukim that describes in some objective perspective what was going on. Good. Now, tell me, hopefully you're not rusty, what do we want to understand? Again, whether it's something small, something large, something thematic, or something literary, what jumps out on us from these psukim? What are things which need some analysis, which are not obvious, at least not at first? Yes?
One thing is repetition of the word shachet, which you
don't usually hear. Okay, so you're talking about which pasuk? Then again in Pasuk Yudbeis. Okay, good. So clearly that, we have the word chamas once, but we have variations of the Tishaches being repeated over and over. What's that coming to teach us? Good, that's important. Yes, Gene.
It seems to me that after Eilat told us Noach, it could have said Eilat told us Noach,
excellent. And that is the question of the pasuk. That is the question of the night. It's the introduction, which is why I asked, how do you translate toldos? And I got one very good suggestion. I didn't hear anyone object. That it means children. These are the children of Noah. Noah was a great guy. That's nice. But that's not one of his children. His children are Shem, Ham, and Yafes. So that is absolutely something that's going to be very critical, which really begs the first question, so to speak, which is, A, how do you understand toldos? If you understand toldos as children, which is certainly a reasonable assumption, then how do you understand the pasuk? You either have to answer the question that way, or you have to say maybe there's another explanation, another translation of toldos. And we will see both of those options taken by different mafarshim. Yes? Did you have a suggestion? Are you going to ask the same question? Anybody else? Yes.
Actually, if you jump back one pasuk to the end of Bereishis, Noach Matzachim Bini Hashem was kind of a non sequitur.
So right, at the end of the parsha.
And then it would seem logical to this parsha to begin the Tzadik Tamim Hayud Bederosa, something about Noach, rather than it's kind of interrupted by Elohim.
Good. So I'll ask it. Let's pick up with Ellie's question, but let's strengthen it even. What's the big statement of fact that the Torah is telling us? We want to know why it's interrupted, as Gene said. But what is the statement of fact that we now know? He had three sons, you know. Shame, Chum, and Yavis. Is that a news bulletin? Here, I'm only asking people who were here for the Brachos here. If you're new to Noah, you don't have to answer. No pressure. But if you were here for Brachos, I have pressure now. Is this a news bulletin to anyone? No, we know this already. What is the big deal? Again, when you begin a parsha, Eila told us, it's like there's this trumpet, you know, news flash, news bulletin. He had three sons, Shame, Chum, Yafis. Okay, then we want to know what the interruption. Good question. But I have a better question. What do we need to know any of this for? We were told already. In the last parak, when it was going through, again, it was for us somewhat tedious, all the different generations, this person and this person, this person and this person, what did we learn? Who can tell me what's the pasuk? Parakei? No, to the beginning of parak vav.
Hey,
Lamed Beis. Vayihi, I turn back in the stone Chumash, page 26. Vayihi Noach ben Chamesh Mayo Shana, Vayolad Noach, as Shem, as Chum, as Yafes. Look at that. We already know that, right? When Noach was 500 years old, he had three sons, Shem, Chum, and Yafes. So we know it already. So everything, we have a repetition of his righteousness. It seems to be forced. The whole pasuk seems to be repetitive and unnecessary. Good. Anyone else? Any other questions? I'm not saying there have to be. Maybe there are. Anybody? Okay. So, if there isn't, so then let's try to give some answers. Yes?
I was just going to say, the only other time he had this phrase, toldos, I guess, looking back, is zeh sefer toldos.
Although we will have it in the future quite a few times.
Yeah. But it's interesting over there, it's introduced by the word sefer.
Okay.
Although, unfortunately, Uncle List doesn't help out. It's the same in both places.
Okay.
But before, when we had it, we talked about that the Sefer Toldos Adam refers to humanity. Here it's talking specifically of Noah.
Well, that was the question of Adam with a capital Aleph, right. Or a lowercase Aleph. Man as in mankind, or Adam as in Adam the person. Right. Okay. Anyway, so let's begin. Let's take a look at the source sheet. And the first question, which is, I think, the most basic one, which is, why are we beginning with Eila told us Noah? We know who Noah was. We know who his family was already. If there's a story about a flood, suddenly, you know, just get on with it. You know, it's almost like the Torah's like, you know, yeah, you know, hello, yes, I have some bad news. You know, just tell me already, you know. We know it's coming. You know, the flood, that's the story. So then just tell me already. What do we need this whole introduction for? Vanoch, we know him already. We've met him. He's a nice guy. We heard that already last parsha. We know he's got three kids. It's all been told to us already. So take a look at the comment. The Abar Benel, the class, right? We know the Abar Benel, the great 15th century commentary. Right? We know from Queen Isabella's and Queen Ferdinand's court in Spain. He makes a comment, which interestingly enough is amplified a few hundred years later. A little bit westward, so to speak. I mean, eastward, excuse me. In Germany, by Rav Hirsch. Abar Benel and Rav Hirsch, so to speak, work in tandem to give us an explanation. What does the Abar Benel tell us? Acharei Asher, the Sefer Bereishis, Sipra HaTorah HaElokis in Yonei Adam HaRishon, Bereishis V'Haskolas Mino. After all, given the fact that we were already told in Bereishis, we were already told about Adam and how, you know, his family line, etc., which was part of the presentation of the whole, you know, opening genealogy of the world. Now, in this second parsha, we're being told again in Yanei Noach the Korosav, the story of Noach and his life, Korosav, the happenings of Noach. Why are we being told this again? Lios ha-haschola, ha-shenis, or ha-beis, lios ha-min ha-enoshi. Because this is a new beginning of humanity. We were told about Noah, this is kind of like in a literary device. We were told about Noah the first time in the sense that Noah was just part of the first chapter of human history. But we're now being reintroduced to Noah in a symbolic sense because he is now not just the 10th, he's not the last person to enter the stage in the first act, he's also the beginning of the second act of history. We meet him a second time, says the Abarbanel, to symbolize the fact that he wasn't just a culmination of 10 generations, he's now the beginning of a whole new chapter of human history. Exactly. Therefore, says the Abarbanel, Chazer l'saper oso b'sefer b'fnei atzmo. Therefore, the Torah repeats it and introduces him not as part of the 10 generations, but independently in his own right. Lios Noach Hascholas Hayachas Voracious Hamin. It's to show us that he is now a new beginning. Kidmus Ve'erach Adam HaRishon. Reminiscent of Adam HaRishon, who was the father of humanity, but his line, other than Noach, ends now. We now have a new father of humanity, and in that sense, the world is being recreated a second time. He's mentioned the second time. The Rav Hirsch mentions the same point. He just says it succinctly and in his characteristic fashion. Eile toldos Noach. But what does Rav Hirsch add? He adds the parallelism, the literary parallelism, which strengthens the Abarbanel's point that this introduction of Noach is done with a similar voice, with similar language and terminology, similar to what? A similar pasuk that was mentioned in the creation story, which highlights the connection that this is a new creation. Eila Todos Noach, just as the Pasuk had said, Eila Todos Hashamayim Va'aretz, so too, this above, meaning our Parsha, introduces a new series of developments. So here a new series of developments is introduced. Just like Eila Todos Hashamayim Va'aretz and Bereishis introduced a new series of developments, namely the creation of the heaven and the earth, so too, Eila Todos here is a trumpeted statement. It is big. We are right to read it that way. It's introducing a new development, a new creation of the world. The rest of mankind perishes. Noah is a second Adam and stands at the head of a new generation of mankind. So he reiterates the Abarbanel's point, but he adds the connection to the Eila Todos, which again strengthens this equation. No question?
Answers a lot of the questions we had.
Why?
Because it's not really in. It's, the part that follows it is not an introductory thing because Todos doesn't really.
Oh, well, you know, it's a good point. You'll ask. Right, it's a good point. You'll
see. If you make the parallel.
If you make the parallel. Right, right. Good, good. So why others didn't? Maybe because they understand Todos literally as children. Very good, Bernie. That's very good. I want to point out before we get to the specifics of how to translate Todos, which will be our next point, I was looking really for that. And I came across something which I had not otherwise been aware of, which is a comment of the Medrash Tanchuma. It's interesting, you know, the reason of the word, why does the Medrash Tanchuma call it Tanchuma? What does that mean, Tanchuma? What's the etymology?
Nothing.
It's supposed to be a comforting text. That's what its purpose was. But it's interesting, I find the next source here from the Tanchuma, I'm not sure if it's so much, maybe you'll tell me if you think it's comforting, or almost heartbreaking or poignant. But I give it to you here in a spirit of kind of really introducing the rest of our introductory here because it sets, I think, it gives us a good perspective in case we need it. It reminds us of and sets the tone of the gravity of the story we're reading and the life that Noah is going to have to live, the tragic life. Tanhuma says as follows. He notes, you had mentioned before the repetition of the word v'tishaches. The Tanchuma notices something else which seems to be almost unnecessarily repetitive, and that is the reference to Noach himself. Eila told us Noach, Noach, ibababa, esalachim, esalachas Noach. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, here you have just in one pasuk, how many times is Noach's name mentioned? Gimel pamim b'pasuk lama. Why he mentioned Noah three times in the pasuk? I bet you, if I gave all of you a 2-minute assignment, give me this pasuk in a condensed form. Make it more economical. Every one of you could do it. There's ways to write this pasuk by giving me the exact information a little bit shorter. And one of the things we would take out is two unnecessary references to Noah's name. Every one of you with a little effort could write this pasuk by only mentioning Noah's name once. Says the Tanchuma, so why? Why is it mentioned three times? Says the Medrash, Ze Echad Mishlosha Shera'u Gimel Olamos. That's just a coincidental thing that there's only two others, so he's one of three. But the point is that all three of the Yidden, for that matter, could have been four or five people, or only one or two people. This group of people, Noach is part of an exclusive, although not necessarily positive, but an exclusive group. What's the group? People who lived through three worlds. What does that mean? Noach, Daniel, and Iyov. Three major figures. Why? Noach, Ra Olam B'Yeshuvo. Noach lived, was part of the world when it was existing. Ura'uhu B'Chorbano. Adam lived through the destruction of the whole world. And again, a theme which I assume will repeat numerous times when we go through the flood. This is not a science fiction story. End of the world! This is real. Imagine living through the destruction of the world. It's cataclysmic in every sense of the word. Noah lived through what was in essence a different world. Ra Olamo B'Yeshuvo and then B'Chorbano. However, in this sense I guess it's a positive or a comforting end, B'Chazer V'Ra'uhu B'Yeshuvo. And then he lived long enough to see the world resettled and repopulated. It says the Medrash that it's in essence three worlds. Now just to me, and each one of these to me are very consequential, look at the comparison. What are the other two examples which would be considered equivalent to Noach's life story? Daniel, Ra'a Binyan Bayis Rishon, he was alive during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. V'ra'uhu Charav, he lived through the destruction. V'chazer V'ra'uhu Banoi B'Binyan Bayis Sheni. Lived till through the beginning of the building of the Bayis Sheni. He was a contemporary of Ezra Nechemiah, a contemporary of Mordechai of the Purim fame, right? They were all from that same generation, the Ashkenaz Zagadola. So first of all, I think that's an amazing statement. What does that give us an appreciation for? The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, right? Living through the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is on par with living through the destruction of the world. Continues the Medrash. And I think again, to me, I hope I'm not making too much of it, and maybe you think I'm being too sensitive, but to me, it's amazing. We go from something really major like the world to still something national like the Beis HaMikdash and Churban, and then we go to something very personal and very private. Concludes the Medrash, Iyov Ra Binyan Beiso. Iyov, in the beginning of the story, has a thriving family. Then he lives through Chorbono, the destruction of his family. The children are all killed. And then Ra'ab Yeshuvo lives long enough to start afresh, to start anew. And here you have the human tragedy of someone losing a family. Now you'll say, but that's just one person. Can you compare that to Golos, to Churban Beis HaMikdash? Can you compare that to the destruction of the world? And the answer is, on some level, of course not. But on some important level that the Medrash is telling us, absolutely. Right? It's reminiscent of the Medrash, right? In the better sense, call him a Kayim Nefesh Achas. Right? You save a life. It's as if you built the life. Built the whole world, excuse me. It's as if you saved the whole world. Right? We have infinite value to any one individual, let alone one family. And obviously, again, it reminds us of, as I heard people say before, reminded me, of course, as well, you have people like in the Holocaust, right? A certain non-famous people, including relatives of mine, but there were certainly famous rebbes, the sons of rebbe, right? Had a whole family. Rabbi Tau, right? Our own Rabbi Tau? Right? We have people that had a whole family, lost it all, started over. That's three worlds. Right? Obviously, there's innumerable examples. Right? So when we look at them, it reminds us it wasn't just their family was destroyed. A world was destroyed. A world was destroyed. I think the power of this medrash is because reciprocal is not the right word, but there's two lessons. And I speak about both of these on and off on Tisha B'Av. One is we should realize the great tragedy of even an individual. On the other hand, it's only when we think about things on an individual level that we have an appreciation for how terrible the meta tragedies are. I quote virtually every year on Tisha B'Av from Stalin, Yimach Shemo. One death is a tragedy, a million a statistic. It becomes too overwhelming. Who gets overwrought and emotional when they think about the destruction of the world? Nobody. Because it strikes us as just science fiction. It's too far removed. But if I told you about Cloney, who lived on such and such a block in Park Heights or in Greenspring, and they were driving and they had a horrible car accident on the thruway, and the whole family was wiped out, we'd all be crying on the floor. We'd be blubbering, as we should. Magnify that by millions, and all of a sudden we lose all of our emotion. So the power of this medrash is in both extremes. The fact that a loss of a family can be compared to the loss of the Beis HaMikdash or the world, Jesus, how much we have to appreciate that. But it also allows us to relate to it, and hopefully therefore given a greater appreciation, magnified, towards what it would mean to live through the destruction, I mean the death, the destruction of the world. I didn't mean to depress anybody, but apparently I did. I can see it on your eyes. But we have to be sober. That's the story we're about to read. Right? There are other stories in Tanakh which are nice and fun, and Parshas Noach is not one of them. It's meaningful, it's important, but it's not nice and fun. We're talking about real stuff. Okay, let's move to something a little lighter. So, what does Toldos mean? How do you like that segue? You pretty much, there was none there, so we just did it. Okay. So, there seems to be a major debate in the Mefarshim. What are Toldos? Take a look at Rashi. Look at, even for example, for the moment, the second opinion in Rashi, which is on the second line. Dover Achar. Here Rashi's answering something which we're going to get to later in the shiur. Why mention, why shtupin Noach ish tzaddik? But what does Rashi say? Dover Achar, lelamedcha, to teach you, she'ikr toldos sehem shal tzaddikim ma'asim tovim. That the main tragedy of a person are their good deeds. Now, it's true that that medrash is making a figurative statement. But the fact that it's making a figurative statement assumes that the text itself is meant to be literal. That is, children. The medrash is taken into a non-literal way. But the reason the medrash does that is because it's not from the text. It clearly implies that Rashi understood, as we assumed before, you were right to suggest, toldos usually means children. Take a look at the end of this section, the Ramban, just for a moment. You'll see the Ramban agreed with Rashi's assumption. V'hanachon, in the middle of the second line, shehu kimashmo. What does toldos mean? What we always thought it means. The simple understanding. It means children. Now, of course, the problem with that is, as we said, if it means children, what is the fact that we're telling us about Noach and his wonderful, laudable characteristics of being a tzaddik doing when we expected it, as Gene had said correctly? It should have just said, Eilat Toldos Noach, shame come be office. Right? So, in resulting that question, a number of Mefarshim answered that question by, with a magic wand, waving it away. There's no question. Why is there no question? Because that's not what Toldos means. And I gave you just three examples, although I could have given you probably even a fourth. Three examples of Mefarshim who more or less all say the same thing, although it is interesting that they pick slightly different ways to formulate it. The first one, the well-known one, is the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, Eila Toldos, what does that mean? Kemo Hakoros. It means the happenings, the story. And he gives you a pasuk in Mishlei, or for that matter, later in Bereishis with Yaakov. Eila Toldos Yaakov, what's listed after that are not his children. Eila Toldos Yaakov means this is the story, these are the happenings of Yaakov. Eila Toldos Noach, so then there's nothing wrong with telling us he's a tzaddik. We're knowing about him, we want to know who the star character is before we hear about the story. Or the Sephorno says the same thing, next source. What does it mean? In Yonov, the happenings, the Yalde Yomov, the things that happened during the day. This is the news bulletin, which is what we said. This is like the snapshot. What was going on in the world? Eila Toldos, these are the things that were going on. This is your news bulletin. Or just to give one final adjective or synonymous term, says the Chizkuni, Loshon Me'oraos V'Sibos. These are the happenings and the causes. This is what's going on. So if you understand Toldos that way, everything works smoothly. Now the truth is that the Ramban was aware we know he often quotes Ibn Ezra and others. The Ramban was aware of that theory, but the Ramban rejects it for Rashi. Take a look at the last source in this section. The Ramban says, quotes the Ibn Ezra, the Radak also, Korosov, it's talking about the stories. Says the Ramban, he has a simple but elegant question. Elegantly simple. Eino nachon ve'einai. Not because he has some proof. He just says simply, it's not true. Why? Ki ein karos adam toldosav. Because that's not what the word means. Sorry. You don't get to make up your own rules. That's not what toldos means, says the Ramban. When you want to say these are happening to something, you don't say toldos. What does the Ramban do about that pasuk by Yaakov? I don't know. Who wants to do the math? How many years till we get to that parak in Bereishis? A year and a half to get to parak to pasuk vav. So who knows? I guess we'll have Emir Tashem. You'll all be here with me. We should all have long, long and healthy lives. We'll all be here together in 30 plus years or so. Anyway, okay. Anyway. But that's what Ramban says. So how does he understand the psukim? No, it means what we thought it meant. It means children. We're going to see later in Perek Yud that we will get to. Hopefully you'll all still be here soon too. There we mean children. It's children. Rather, in essence, says Ramban, read it as is. Yomer Eila toldos Noach. Read it as if it were to say what Gene wanted it to say. Yomer, you should read it as Eila toldos Noach. Shem Chaviyopis. I'll say something. Taka, why mention that Noach was a tzaddik? The Ramban has an answer for that. We'll see that in a few minutes. Okay, so basically you have the debate. Ramban and Rashi on the one hand, Radak, Sforno, Chizkuni, Ibn Ezra on the other hand, what does this mean? Now on some level it's a very technical and maybe even uninteresting question. How do you translate the word? On the other hand, it has a little bit larger significance because depending on how you translate the word will be whether you're very much bothered by Noach Ish Tzadik. And it's not surprising that the Sforno, the Chizkuni, and the Ibn Ezra are going to be of no help to us because they didn't have a problem that they needed to give us an answer to. If you understand like Rashi or the Ramban, so then you have a problem. It doesn't make any sense. These are the family, the children of Noach. Noach was a Tzadik. That makes no sense. So let's take a look at section Gimel, and we'll see an attempted answers to this question. They all build, for the most part, there's a third answer, but for the most part, most Mishronim are building off of two answers that are quoted by Rashi. So let's turn our attention to Rashi. Rashi says, first Rashi on the Parsha, again, this is why, again, I point this out with regularity, and I hope it's not... I hope it's appreciated. The reason why it's so important to begin our shir with reading just psukim and just thinking about the psukim is because we then see the mefarshim will appreciate. Sometimes the mefarshim will spell out a question for us. So maybe we anticipated it, maybe we didn't. But this Rashi is a perfect example. Rashi never spells out a question. He just throws out two explanations. Explanations for what? You know, what's the classic question that sometimes Rebbeim or Moors will try to get you to learn, especially when you're younger? Right, there's even a book, there's a series of books called What's Bothering Rashi? So we now know what's bothering Rashi, even though he didn't tell us. So now we can appreciate, he just goes right into midstream, what's the answer? Answer number one says, Rashi, Hoil v'hiskiro siper b'shivcho. Which is another way of saying, Ein hachinami, you're right, it doesn't belong. But the Torah, so to speak, couldn't help it. Once Noach's name is mentioned, parenthetically, we couldn't help but tell you, you know, he is such a great guy. You know, there are people, I'm sometimes like this, you know, people who digress, you know, you're telling about something, you want to tell, you know, somebody, you know, your spouse, you came home from work, and you want to say about a particular thing that happened in a meeting, you know, and John, oh my gosh, John, you know, and then you mention the story. Right? Did that happen? You don't have to say that, you could have told the story without it, but once you mention this person's name, it immediately flashes in your head. Either I love him, I hate him, whatever. So the Torah says, Rashi, answer number one, you're right, it has nothing to do with it. It should have just told us the name of the kid. That's really all we want to know now. Why do we need to know the kids again? Did we know them already? We saw that already. We saw that from the Abar Benel. We have an answer. Because it's a new story, a new chapter in history, so we want to, so to speak, re-cement our connection. But why does it mention that Noah was a tzaddik? Because we couldn't help it. Once we mentioned his name, we couldn't help but tell you, you know, that's a great guy. And he had three kids. But he's a great guy, Noah. That's what Rashi says. Take a look at the bottom of your source sheet. And here you have, we'll appreciate it, as we've seen before, you know, there are many, many commentaries on the Chumash. But then you have things which are, in English, would call supra-commentaries, which is a commentary on a commentary. So Rashi was so ingenious and so consequential, but also so succinct, that Rashi gave birth to a whole cottage industry of Sfarim that were written not on Chumash, but written on Rashi on Chumash. One of those is called the Divrei David. There's many Sfarim. You could have a bookshelf of Sfarim just on Rashi. One of those is called the Divrei David, which was written by Rav David Halevi, who's more well known for his halachic work known as the Taz, which is a commentary to Shulchan Aruch, as the Divrei David. Another famous one, which is one of the people he quotes here, is the Maharal. The Maharal's Gur Aryeh is not technically a commentary on the Chumash, it's a commentary on Rashi on the Chumash. So the Taz explicates what is now obvious to us. Why does Rashi need to come on to this weird statement? The kasha, because otherwise it's difficult. Shavol lahas, you're told those of, you come to tell me the kids, the Sefer B'Shivcho, and instead you tell me how great a guy Noach was. So now we answer, Rashi says, the Hizkira, once by mentioning Noach, we're just uncontrollably, you know, goremes, hashvach, we have to go tell us how good he was. And now, once we have that interruption, that's why when it continues, we have to say, Vayoled Noach. And we couldn't just say, Eila told us Noach and the names, because there's already a break in the theme. But the force of it all comes, says the Taz again, just amplifying Rashi, because we are just so overwhelmed, our love of Noach, by mentioning his name, we just have to, it spills out, we have to say how great he is. Now, as a PS, I just want to mention, I don't have time to get into it, but on the bottom, he points out that really the Maharal and maybe others ask, well, if that's the case, how come this seems to be the first time that happened? Because you look at other times in Tanakh where we mention Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, we don't have this ding going off. Avraham, ooh, he's a tzaddik. Every time we mention Avraham, we don't just get overwhelmed with having to tell you how great he was. Or Yitzhak, or Yaakov. So why dafka now? And in essence, the answer that they give is that, you're right, we don't always have to say that, but when they're being mentioned, as in the case of Noah here, in the context or in a larger story of Rishonim, people are very wicked, we want to let you know, even for a split millisecond, don't be confused and think of Noah as just another member of this horrible generation that is Matishaches, really, really, really bad and filled with chomos. No, from before you even get to that, Noah's already been set apart. Noah is tzaddik. Tamim hayu v'doros. Okay, fine. What about the Ramban? Ramban also said that it means children. So Ramban doesn't give what I would consider a complete answer, but he does tell us a simple answer. Hichzir vayoled Noach. Why do we have this whole break in the action? Now, why did we need to know that? Says Ramban. Because what's going to be the next story we're going to get to? God's going to command Noach to build an ark. And you would ask the question. This is very similar, really, to the Taz. I think you'll ask the question: why does Noach get to be the lucky guy? Why not me? Why not the guy down the block? Oh, no. Tzadik Hayatamim Derosam. He got picked because he deserved it. Because he happened to be a tzadik. Similar to the last thing I just mentioned to you, which is that, again, we don't always tell the adjectives and the superlatives of a tzadik, except for when we need to answer an implicit question of why is he different than the people around him. And in essence, that's what the Ramban says as well. Okay, that's all pretty much answer number one, building on the first thing we saw from Rashi. Take a look back now in Rashi for a second answer. And we saw this before, but now we'll really focus on it. Dovar Acher, second line in your Rashi's. The Lamedcha to teach us, Sh'ikr told Oseihem Shal Tzadikim Ma'asim Tovim. What is the progeny of the righteous? Not necessarily their children in a biological sense, their children, what their progeny, their legacy, which is, I guess, how you would translate it, is their legacy are their ma'asim tovim, their good deeds and their mitzvahs. If you take a look at the parentheses, so whoever filled in these sources, and I don't think it was Rashi himself, gives you two references, a Tanchuma, a Medrash, and Beis Reish, a Bereishis Rabbah. In fact, This is in variation mentioned in both of those midrashim, although as we have seen countless times in our series of shurim, often when Rashi says he's doing nothing more than quoting a medrash, he doesn't necessarily quote it word for word. He paraphrases. So I don't think there's any essential difference, but take a look on your source sheet, the next two sources, you have exactly those midrashim that Rashi was drawing from. Third source right on top of the sheet, the Medrash Tanchuma, Eile told us, Noah, Pasach, Rabbi Tanchuma, Barabba, V'Omar. What is the purpose of, what do we see from this? So they all quote, which Rashi didn't tell us, a Pasuk from Proverbs, from Mishlei. Pri Tzadik Eitz Chaim, the pre of the Tzadik, the fruit of the Tzadik is the Eitz Chaim. V'lokeach Nefashos Chacham. Right? And the wise one is also acquiring Nefashos. Omer Le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Banim Eino Omer Ela Pri Tzadik. It doesn't say that the legacy of the Tzadik is his children. It says it is the Eitz Chaim. What is Eitz Chaim reference of? A different pasuk. What is Eitz Chaim he? Lamachazike, but Eitz Chaim is the Torah, the tree of life. Is of course a well-known metaphor for Torah. Ma Hein Peiro, excuse me, I skipped the place. V'chein Toldosav Shel Adam Eilu Maisim HaTovim. Those mitzvot, that Torah, the Eitz Chaim, that is the pre of the Tzadik. That is the real legacy of the righteous. V'chein Hu Omer, and what is? How does the Medrash know this? Our pasuk, Eilu Toldos Noach, Noach Ki Tzadik Tamim. So you'll say, if it means children, why didn't it just tell us the children? So says Rashi, says the Medrash is teaching us a deeper lesson. That when we think of children, we don't just mean biological children. We also give birth to the good deeds, the legacy that our good deeds leave behind. And in a very meaningful sense, that is like a child. We're leaving behind something in the world. That is the legacy of our good deeds. The Bereishis Rabbah, the Medrash, says it as well, a little bit more succinctly, also quoting the Pasuk in Mishlei, Ma'ein Peirosav Shal Tzadik, what are the fruits of the Tzadik? Mitzvos v'maisim tovim. It's interesting that Rashi, again, I could not find, someone finds it, you let me know. I could not find a primary text which used Rashi's qualifier of Iker. Right? Am I correct? Didn't Rashi say that? Iker told Oseya. Rashi strengthened the Medrash. I couldn't find it in either. First I found the Bereishis Rabbah, it wasn't in there. Then I looked in the Tanchuma. I don't see that. That's not a minor word. I'm not saying it radically changes the thing, but Rashi, it seems, wanted to or chose to add the word Iker. It's not just that it's a good thing to do good things. Did that come out right? It's not just that it's meaningful that we have a legacy of the actions that we do. Rashi says it's the ikker. It's the main thing. Now, whether you can give or take or leave the ikker, but the main thing, which is in common, which Rashi is just borrowing, is borrowing, in fact, from the Medrash, is that in essence, you want to know why Maisim Tovim gets shtupped in between Noach and his children? The answer is because, in essence, when we speak about children, we think about the legacy that you're leaving. Well, one, if not the main, maybe according to Rashi, the main legacy you leave is the mark of the actions that you do. And in fact, commenting and amplifying expanding on this, Rav Hirsch says the point again in his typically insightful and poetic way. Rav Hirsch says he himself is named as being the first Tolda. This gives our sages the opportunity of remarking that the first product of a man, the first result of his work, is his own character. And of course, as he says, this is especially impressive when you think about the environment in which he was living. To have lived in that world, and of course this is referred to now for the first time foreshadowing the famous discussion we'll have to get to about Noah's relative merit in his generation and another generation. But the bottom line, says Rav Hirsch, seemingly with one opinion in the Medrash, this is impressive, to have lived in a den of thieves and emerged someone that the Torah itself could describe you as a tzaddik and nish tamim. That's taka, an accomplishment. That's a tolda. That's a real legacy. At least as much, if not more, than having children. That's an impressive feat. And that is what Noah was able to accomplish.
It's interesting. It seems like the Sisei HaChoim sort of understands this ikar.
What does he say? I don't have that.
In other words, the implication is, since it mentions his good deeds before it mentions his children, that's what the word Iker
is. I see.
It's not Iker like the other translation of the word Iker, but in other words...
Yeah, but why? Why mention it first? The answer is because there's something, in a certain sense it seems, at least for Noach, if not for all of us, more important.
All right, that's Rashi more means the word Iker in that sense.
Right, okay. Yeah. That's significant. Okay. Just to mention one other thing, which I found, which is not from Rashi, not as well known, I don't think. Alpha had never really heard of it. And that is the last thing here in this section, also from Bereishis Rabbah, a different answer to the question. Why does it, and in fact, it's actually a previous medrash which actually specifies the question. And again, in a similar vein that Gene had asked the question. Why does it say it like this? Ella told us Noach Shem. It should have gone right into the name Shem Cham B'Yafes. So says the medrash, Ella Naicha Lo, rather it's coming to teach you that there's two Noachs. Ella told us Noach, comma, Noach. Why the double Noach back to back? What did he say? Anyway, Noah. Yes, God.
Hello?
Hineni. Noah, why is there a Noah twice, says the Medrash here? To show us that Noah Sidkus had a double benefit, a double ramification. Nayach lo. He was so good that he was worthy of saving himself, and the world continues to exist in his merit. It wasn't just that he got to survive, his children got to survive. He did merits in the next world and in this world. So the Eila told us, Noach, it's back to back Noach to teach you that his sidkus didn't just benefit himself, but benefited others. Okay. Fine, doesn't really answer the question as much as it makes a nice theological point. Let's just conclude tonight's shiur quickly by mentioning a few of the comments that our mefarshim to add to what is the difference between tzaddik and tamim. Sometimes there's like these rabbinic letters that you get, l'chvod, so-and-so, harav, hagon, hamufla, hatzaddik, So the people who do that don't have any, they're just looking to fill up a line, adjective after superlative after compliment. But if the Torah said tzaddik and tamim, presumably two different things are met. Well, what are they? So there's not that much variation, but there is some different theories proposed by the different mefarshim. For example, the Ibn Ezra says, tzaddik means in his actions, b'ma'asav, tamim in his heart. Right? He wasn't just a good guy, he was a sincerely erlicha guy. In his heart, he was a good guy. The Radak says, Shayimasav B'tzedek, Hefech Anshei Doru Shanshei Chamos. It's telling us something more specific and nuanced, says the Radak. He was honest. Everyone is thieving around him, everyone is stealing around him, and he was honest in business and money. Tamim, Sholem Belo Shemdofi, the way we often think of Tamim, he was perfect, there was no cracks, nothing around him that was problematic. Take a look at the Medrash Tanchuma, which I think is very, very fascinating. The Medrash Tanchuma says, Ish tzaddik, al shezon briyosav shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikra tzaddik. If I asked any one of you, and I said the following, honestly, if I were to describe, if I did a test, a psychological test on you, and I said so-and-so, oh, what a tzaddik. If I picked a famous person, a famous Rebbetzin, a Rebbe, or just a guy down the street, oh, didn't you hear so-and-so, Nebuchadnezzar, this old man passed away. Oh, what a tzaddik. What is the first thing that comes to your mind? What is the first thing that comes to your mind? What did he or she do that is such a tzaddik? Really? Okay, anybody else?
Learned a lot.
Learned a lot. Okay. All right, my experiment didn't work. Well, I thought, or I think, that the average person, the way we bandy around the word, he's so tzad, he's so frum. Our mind immediately goes to Ben Adam Malach. Frum, tzadik. Dobbins, learns, just walks around like this. A tzadik. Lives in a hovel in the middle of Meir Sharon. That's a tzaddik. And it could be that that's really what Ibn Ezra means. I don't know. It's a tzaddik. But again, the Medrash Tanchuma says it very, very differently in a sense, or very clearly. Whether we didn't know or not, the Medrash Tanchuma says, why was he a tzaddik? He fed people. He fed people. He did tzaddik. Zon brioso shal kadosh baruch hu. When did he do that? In the teva. I don't know if he did it yet. I'm not sure. It could be that this is a retrospective compliment. Or maybe he was doing it even before then. Maybe he had a soup kitchen. I don't know. But what is the Medrash saying? He's a tzaddik because he fed people. And then it points out, and this is amazing, Medrash Tanchuma, which I never knew about, Yosef is referred to as a tzaddik. Yosef is one of the only biblical characters that the Chazal talk about as a tzaddik. We think of, why was Yosef a tzaddik? He resisted Achish Potiphar. Again, Ben Aram Lamoko. He was a tzaddik, you know, from. No, I'm not looking at anything. I'm looking at the end, you know. Take off my glasses. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, you know why he was a tzaddik? Because he fed the world. Chesed. Apparently Susan is a tzaddik, because this is the first thing that came to her mind. She said chesed. Tamim. So interestingly, what does the Medrash say in a completely different vein? Ze Echad, Noah was one of the seven who was born circumcised. And apparently there's a certain mark of completion that we would save in a person who was born in a perfected state. Born circumcised. The Medrash goes through who the seven were and tells us that Noah was one of them. And we see that the word Tamim is associated with Bris Milah, and we don't have anywhere in the Chumash that Noah had a Bris. How could it be called a Tamim? Because he was born circumcised. This is, I just gave you the little background that the Torah Tamimah says in the last phrase. That the Torah Tamimah points out that Avram Avinu, the super duper Avram Avinu, is only referred to as a Tamim after he has a Bris. Says the Torah Tamimah, we can infer from that Tamimus, at least for a man, is associated with perfecting his body, namely with the Bris Milah, and that, for Avram, had to wait until he actually had the Bris. So what about Noah? Did he get a free pass? In a manner of speaking. He didn't have to cry, but he didn't get a free pass, and since he didn't get called it without having a Bris, he was born circumcised, which again bespeaks a certain physical and spiritual perfection, even, so to speak, that was innate. Okay, let's stop here. And I think this sets us up, especially these last verses, which speak about the compliment and the positive attitude towards Noach, with, of course, the famous equivocation that Rashi has. I don't know, was Noach so good? Is he good? And let's see where all that comes from next time. Again, that's in 3 weeks. 3 weeks. I don't have the date, but I can give you the date if you prefer. I'll give you the date. 3 weeks. Today is the 6th, so it will be the 27th. Next class is the 27th. Okay, Erev Tov, good evening, and good to be back.